versus the comptroller, Glenn Hager. And Mr. Siegel, you're here on behalf of neighbors.
Thank you. May it please the court. Thank you for hearing this case on Valentine's Day.
Let me make sure.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hold on just a second. And Ms. Hargis on behalf of the state, correct? Okay. All right. And for the few of you in the audience, if you'd silence any electronic devices that you might have, I know we would all appreciate that. So now, Mr. Siegel, with that, feel free to approach the podium.
Well, better a tax case than a divorce on Valentine's Day, I guess.
Yes.
Here.
Exactly. I forgot to wear my red tie as well. This case, I think, is a interesting case because it involves an industry-specific exemption, and there's not very many of those in the tax code. This exemption was written.
Can I interrupt you just a second? We've got this newfangled recording equipment. Let me go ahead and just state basically for the record that this is 03-17-00284 CV. So I'm sorry for the interruption.
No worries. This is an industry-specific exemption, and I think it becomes important in interpreting it. We also have case law, the Rourke Amusement case that this court heard that was affirmed by the Supreme Court. We also have the Allstate case that Justice Pemberton wrote a very long and scholarly opinion in. And the point of those two cases is you have to focus on plain meaning. I think we all agree on that. And it's also important, though, in looking at plain meaning to look at the economic realities of the particular business that you're applying a statute to in tax. And that's even more important when you have an industry-specific exemption. So from a holistic perspective, if you step back and look at the comptroller's arguments they're making about 151.324, which is the issue that I'm appealing on, their arguments completely ignore the economic reality and would render the exemption meaningless. And that's what we argue in the brief, and I hope we got that point across. For example, Ms. Hargis,
can I back you up a little bit? And this may be a 101 kind of question, but what is the event that's being taxed here, the sale or the use specifically from which you're claiming the exemption? Is it the purchase of the what they term the component, purchase goods, I guess, to use a neutral term, or is it being housed in Texas? And what exactly is the event being taxed?
I think it depends because there's a use tax involved.
Okay.
These are out-of-state purchases by neighbors of drilling equipment that they bring into the state. So they don't owe sales tax because they bought them out of state. They owe use tax, though, because they brought them into the state.
Now, what they call component parts.
Well,
the stuff you put together to make the bigger stuff that which you actually use to drill.
I have an enormous problem with that because ultimately, and this, tell me if you want to stop me, but I wanted to talk about Ms. Hargis's definition of equipment that she cites in her brief, and here's the problem with their approach. They say equipment means the articles or implements used for a specific purpose or activity, especially a business operation. Now take their definition of equipment and apply it to the activity of drilling a well. The only thing that would be equipment under their definition, if you just blindly followed it and ignored the commercial realities, would be the whole drill string, right? What drills the well is the drill string that is out on location, that is assembled from hundreds or dozens of different items. For example, the mud motors, the measurement by drilling tools. Those, I don't think, they wouldn't meet their definition of equipment. So they've taken this Black's Law Dictionary definition of equipment, and the only thing that would be exempt would be the drill string, which makes no sense because you don't buy drill strings. Those are created and built on site. And before you do that, you're building the components, if you will, of the drill string, and neighbors builds the components of the drill string using drilling equipment. So we've got really hung up on nomenclature here, and it makes the case difficult.
Can you point out any other instance, any other context where equipment is the term used to describe a piece of property, a widget, that on its own, independently, cannot and does not perform any function, rather it is a component, it's a part. I mean, can you think of any other example where you would use equipment to describe what is in reality simply one of many parts that is necessary to turn all of that into one functioning tool?
Well, Your Honor, we cited an Arkansas case that talks about the word equipment being very context dependent. And so I think when we think about equipment, we also have to think about the statute using the phrase drilling equipment. And there was a lot of testimony, and this may be a term of art really, or it may be a term where testimony's relevant to look at, from our expert witness, Mr. Fett, that drilling equipment includes the purchases that are made. It may also, under, depending on how you define it, it may include the things that are built from the drilling equipment, and it may ultimately include the drill string. But I think we have to go to the context of the statute and the wording in the statute that the legislature used, and we have to think about the commercial realities. Why would they have an industry-specific statute that would only apply to the drill string under their definition? That makes absolutely no sense to me anyway. And on page two of the appellant's brief, we've reproduced the statutory language. And we're really dealing with one sentence in 151.324b. Drilling equipment that is used for the exploration for production of oil, gas, sulfur, and other minerals that is built for exclusive use outside the state. And as we've argued, the way that this industry works, they buy drilling equipment according to the testimony, they build that into tools. There were three witnesses that testified to that at length. The comptroller didn't call any witnesses. So to ignore the commercial reality of how wells have been drilled. Mr. Fett, our expert, he's older than anybody in this room. And he was out around when literally modern technology developed. He was around when the statute was passed. And they've always drilled wells this way. These wells are very complex things. They have a well plan that an engineer designs. The engineer then custom designs and orders everything that goes into that drill string. And in fact, one of the findings of the judge, I believe it was finding eight, she found that the tools involved are not sold, because we put on all this testimony that you can't buy tools, because tools are custom built from drilling equipment for each job. That was the overwhelming, uncontested testimony.
Can you say that again? The term tools you're using denotes what?
The term tools would be, for example, measurement while drilling tools. And there's a lot of testimony about that as a tool. That tool is then part of the drill string. That tool doesn't do anything, by the way.
The drill string is just, would be like all the pipe that goes in and all the stuff that's stuck down the hole, essentially.
Everything.
To describe, okay.
Yeah, everything. Okay. So the drill string, according to my opposing counsel, might meet her Black's Law Dictionary definition of equipment, because that's the only thing that does anything. Like, think of a vacuum cleaner. You plug the vacuum cleaner in. The only thing that actually does anything.
Counsel, the rub, though, is in the trial court found that the purchased items are not built by your client, correct?
I don't know that that's exactly what was found, but the testimony was the purchase items are built into tools.
Right.
And the statute talks about buying drilling equipment and building it into tools. That's also clear from subpart D. If you look at the first sentence of subpart D, it contemplates buying items and further assembling those, which is what exactly...
Finding of fact number 10 is that neighbors did not build the purchased items. And some of these purchased items, the term the trial court used, for example, in the MWD tools, are batteries. So just from a big picture standpoint, you are asserting that batteries are drilling equipment, correct?
Yes, and the trial court misconstrued the statute. The statute talks about buying drilling equipment and building the drilling equipment into tools. And in other words, the trial court didn't really focus on the text of the tax code at all. B says that, and D also says that, the first sentence. The other problem is,
As a factual background, are these tools, the MWD and the mud motors, are they leased to the end user?
No, they're used.
Are they sold?
No, they're, excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Part of a service, that's okay.
They're used by neighbors. Neighbors builds these tools using drilling equipment. This is all uncontested testimony, very detailed in the record with expert, okay? I'm not making this up. And then those tools are transported to the well location, and those are put into the drill string. This takes a long time because all of these different tools come from different vendors.
Custom made for the customer, and then it's part and parcel of the services that neighbors provide.
Right.
Okay. And then they take them, after that's done, take them back, disassemble them, clean, and potentially reuse.
Right. So I view drilling equipment really as being sort of a term of art, but then when you look at the statute and you look at the commercial reality, this court would be completely eviscerating and disregarding the legislature's intent, both in words.
Why could it not have been their intent to promote and incentivize a cottage industry in Texas of companies that perform the function that Neighbors has taken upon itself, which is to assemble this? I mean, it's easy for me to see that that certainly is in the realm of the possibility that in an effort to promote some economic development, the legislature said, you know what, you companies, if you want to come from out of state and purchase perhaps custom-made drilling equipment, that will promote a little cottage industry of companies that buy the parts and assemble them into the ultimate package that is needed for drilling at these various sites.
Well, Justice Pryor, I think you have it. That I don't know that I exactly agree with your description, but generally I agree with you because the legislature was saying a company like Neighbors, locate your operation here, buy all the drilling equipment, assemble the tools here, and if you can show, as we've
done.
The
distinction that I'm making is that then a Neighbors comes in and purchases exempt from the sales tax the ultimate product that is needed to perform the drilling out at the site.
Well, Your Honor, the ultimate product would be a drill string, and we've got testimony that drill strings are not something you purchase. A drill string is an engineered item with dozens of vendors providing items in the drill string. So I don't think that was the legislature's intent, that they would have had no understanding of how the industry operated. We spent most of this trial explaining to the trial court how drilling operates and the relationship between drilling equipment, tools, and the drill string. And so the comptroller has come up with really alternative facts here that describe a business that's never existed. And the legislature, I think it's very clear, wanted to encourage a company like Neighbors to buy these various items, put those together into tools. If they could show the tools were only used out of state, then the companies like Neighbors hopefully will locate here as opposed to New Orleans. And that's very clear from the record. Thank you.
Can I ask a quick question, though? This is more grammar than, which may or may not be economic reality. Within B, second clause, the word built or the verb built, subject to that sentence would be drilling equipment, wouldn't it? So wouldn't drilling equipment have to be what is built? And if I understand you correctly, you're referring to the purchased components or the purchased items, with the trial court term, purchased items, as the drilling equipment. How do we reconcile those two things? It seems to contemplate building of, quote, drilling equipment, end quote, in Texas. And you seem to be reading in a third category of tools as being what's built. And well, I guess if you want to respond to that, I'll reply when you get next time.
I'm happy to respond now. The evidence is that really the purchases, these items are manufactured. That's the reality of it. The build is a technical term in this industry. Everyone who's in this industry knows what build means. Built or built refers to taking these types of purchased items and building them into a tool. I mean, that's a term of art. And there's all this expert testimony, factual testimony. Now, the grammar issue, I think you have to read that to say drilling equipment has to be built. It doesn't say it has to, when it has to be built. I think the word built is not the same thing as manufacture. A battery's manufactured. A battery is built along with a lot of other things into, you know, one of these tools. Again, this is all in the record. And I think the judge got confused or didn't really follow the statute in her finding to say, well, the items that were purchased weren't built. That may be true depending on what you mean by built. You don't build a battery. You know, build, I think, is a term of art. And that's why we put on so much evidence about what a build involves. A build is what happens when these items are purchased and then they are built into tools. And again, that's why economic reality becomes important. It's an industry-specific exemption. Why would you interpret this without following the testimony about how the industry has always worked and the economic realities of it? It's like Rourke Amusement and Allstate. You know, you come in and blindly say, well, I mean, I don't know anything about the industry, and I'm going to pretend I don't know anything about the industry, and I'm going to make assumptions and hypotheses. Well, look at the economic reality that's been proven here, and I think you're going to end up siding with us on this issue. Thank you.
Okay. May it please the court. Neighbors is an oil and gas services company, and this case is about whether Neighbors' purchases of drilling component parts is exempt from sales and use tax. Neighbors' representative testified at trial that the component parts could not be used for drilling, and therefore the trial court's finding that it was the mud motors and MWD tools which were drilling equipment was correct. And also, therefore, Neighbors does not qualify for the sales tax exemption in 151.324B. Additionally, when we're looking at the economic realities, I believe the case law refers to the economic realities of the transactions at issue, which here are the purchase of these drilling component parts or purchased items, if you want to use a neutral term. And also at trial.
So what's being taxed is the purchase of what the trial court termed the
purchased items. So that is
the stuff that gets put together. Parts.
Correct.
That become the tools through assembly.
Right. And so when we look at the economic realities of that transaction, or those transactions that occurred, Neighbors purchasing specialist testified that they made those purchases for the purpose of replenishing stock and putting those items into storage in their facility until they received a job and performed this custom build. They weren't specifically purchased for use on an out-of-state job. Additionally, looking at the transactions at issue.
How is that storage different than the DTWC Corp versus Combs case out of our court?
Well,
storage of the hotel supplies.
So to jump into the use tax a little bit, when we're looking at storage and temporary storage specifically here, here, those items, component parts, were stored indefinitely at Neighbors' pleasure until they decided to do whatever it is that they were going to do with them, build them, throw them away, whatever the case may be. Whereas in the hotel case, a shampoo or conditioner or whatever it was turned over to a customer to do what they pleased with it. And so I think the distinction is because that was dealing with the sale for resale exemption, and this is dealing with an exemption from sale or use tax, it's a little bit different because you don't have the same concerns about double taxation. And pointedly, at all times, Neighbors maintained control of what happened to these component parts, which in turn goes to the fact that they used them in Texas. And so, based on the Supreme Court's decision in ETC marketing, an item is taxable, constitutionally taxable, in the state of Texas where it is here for longer than a temporary period, and that is defined as stored for indefinite periods of time at the owner's pleasure to do with what they please, use or dispose or whatever, and that's what Neighbors did here. And so, you know, normally that use tax exemption is meant to pay respect to the Commerce Clause and not tax items that are in the flow of interstate commerce. But the facts of Neighbors' particular case don't meet that because, one, the items were not temporarily stored in Texas. If anything, looking to the decision in the Allstate case, the out-of-state jobs were the temporary absence from the state. Rather, Texas is their domicile. It's their permanent home.
Counsel, did the comptroller need to put on, controverting evidence going to temporary?
I don't believe so because, really, really importantly here, in these tax cases, we're looking to the particulars of a business. And so I don't know what kind of evidence we could put on other than to use people who work for that business like we did here in the Neighbors case. And so so lawyers from the comptroller did cross-examine those, but I don't know what kind of witness we could put on to answer what is a legal question. And then the other concern about the use tax is that the items continually and repeatedly come back to Texas for additional indefinite periods. And so when they are returned.
I guess they're being taxed on the use tax each time?
The tax is on the purchase. So okay. The purchase of the item, the one purchase okay. of the item
the
from out of state.
Of the item.
That's right.
Okay, gotcha.
The item would be subject to tax one time at the time of purchase. Yes.
Okay.
And so when Neighbors performs those acts of disassembling the mud motors and MWD tools and cleaning them and disposing of the things that are not reusable, those are all uses under the statute. And therefore, Neighbors does.
For what purpose?
So typically, use is the exercise.
So you're I assume you're referring to the exercise of a right pursuant to ownership.
Yes, Judge. And so.
Doesn't use sort of connote for something?
Well, in this case, the use is so that the parts can be put back on a shelf if they're reusable, so that at whatever indefinite time period in which Neighbors receives a new job, they can do the next custom build.
And on this use point, you all also maintain that it's temporary, that it's not temporary storage, which defeats their claim to the exemption.
Yes, Judge.
And that they were unable to establish that it was for use out of state.
Correct. And that actually also, the use question also goes to the sales tax exemption because the sales tax exemption only applies to drilling equipment built for exclusive use outside of this state. So actually, Neighbors' use of the drilling component parts in Texas defeats their ability to avail themselves of either the sales tax or the use tax exemption. I think importantly here is that in exercising their right or power incidental to the ownership of tangible personal property, not only do they get to decide how long the items sit on the shelf, but they also decide when they return from a job whether they can be reused or not reused. And there's been some back and forth between the parties about the difference between assembly and reassembly and those kinds of things, which are not use. Assembling or reassembling something are not use. Those are exempt from use. But it's the cleaning and particularly the disposal of the non-reusable items that just don't fall into an exemption from use. Those, I believe, are clearly use under the statute, which would defeat Neighbors' ability to take that use tax exemption under 151.330B.
Let's go back to the notion of temporary. If these parts are coming and going and coming and going always, I mean, isn't that evidence of temporary storage? There's nothing in subsection B of 151.330 that says it has to be temporarily stored and then leaves the state permanently.
Well, so on that note, the tax exemption is based on the Commerce Clause, which assumes that items that remain in the flow of interstate commerce are the ones that are constitutionally taxable. And so under that, the lens of the Commerce Clause, it doesn't anticipate an item repeatedly coming back to the home state as a means of dodging taxation. And if you look to the evidence in this case, the other problem is that there wasn't any evidence of how long the component parts stayed in inventory before jobs or between jobs during the audit period. The evidence that was presented was from a period after the audit period that was supposed to be substantially similar. And in those cases, some of the parts sat on the shelf for hundreds of days.
But you're sort of suggesting under the lens of the Commerce Clause, even if it sat on the shelf for 5 minutes and then left the state, if it came back, it would abrogate this exemption in 330B.
I think that that's true. There was no evidence particularly that these parts just come and go and come and go and come and go, or that, they were immediately unbuilt to be rebuilt into something new. But even in that case, at some point you're going to have stoppage, and I think that goes back to the point that while the component parts are temporarily absented from Texas, they're permanently housed here. And I think that defeats the idea of temporary storage. I mean, not to get philosophical, but all storage is temporary. And so it's just a question of, the term temporary is somewhat imprecise. And I think that applying a broad definition of temporary here would be contrary to the purpose of the statute.
Are you saying that B in 330 is coextensive with the Commerce Clause parameters or what can be taxed validly in Texas?
That's right. And so,
well, then why would you have B in the first place? Because doesn't the whole tax code presume that you can tax in the first place?
Right.
With the Constitution?
Right. But it's my understanding that this particular section, which is entitled Interstate Shipments, Common Carriers, and Services Across State Lines, was to clarify the difference between items that remained in the flow of interstate commerce when what meets the in-transit test and when stoppage has taken place. And I think that ETC marketing case is the best recent example we have of that. And again, goes back to when tangible personal property is stored for an indefinite period of time at the owner's pleasure, that is not temporary. That is taxable, constitutionally taxable, by the state of Texas. And just to go back to the sales tax exemption for a moment, I think it's fairly clear that the component parts are not built for exclusive use outside of the state. The vendors manufacturing them don't necessarily know where they're going to go, and in fact when Neighbors makes the purchases of the component parts, they're again to replenish stock, not for a particular out-of-state job. So it's just another reason why the sales tax exemption does not apply in this case. And then one final point
on that point, though, if you do the language in the cases talks about we can't disregard the economic realities underlying the transactions in issue. These transactions, this is under the umbrella of oil and gas drilling.
Right.
I'm presuming the comptroller would say the transaction is the purchase of the component parts.
That's
the purchased
right.
Items, to use the term used by the trial court. But is it really that narrow? I mean, you can't make these tools that are drilling equipment that the oil and gas drillers need. You can't make it without these component parts. Doesn't this merge all into one big piece of drilling equipment, its parts and the end product?
So if we look to the tax code itself, there are exemptions for manufacturers when component parts are involved. And if the legislature
Pipes.
Had intended for these component parts to be tax exempt, they certainly knew how to say component parts. And you can't drill alone with a rotor or a stator or a battery. And so I think the problem here is that Neighbors is trying to make a tax exemption fit its business rather than applying the facts as they are to the tax exemption, which is why there has to be that additional term of drilling tools, which isn't in the statute, in order to make things sort of fit. But then you go back to having the problem with the fact that the items are used here. Disposal is use under the statute, so they are not built for exclusive use outside of the state or used solely outside of the state.
And remind me, now we all know why. Make the little reminder before the...
That happens every few years, sorry.
There's no phone exemption for judges, as far as I know.
Well, I've seen a presiding officer have their phone go off immediately after having given the admonishment to turn your phone off. It could be worse, and I apologize, friends.
I can't recall now, on the exclusive use facet of this, are we only talking about those, the ultimate component holes that go out of state, or are we talking about all of the parts?
All of the parts. So my understanding is that the sales tax purchases are purchases from in-state vendors, whereas the use tax purchases are from out-of-state vendors. But both tax exemptions require use only outside of Texas in order for them to be applicable.
I'm assuming that there was some, I see you're out of time, but I assume there was some discussion below about how could these be exclusively used out of state if they come back?
Yes. Okay. Extensive.
Okay.
Extensive right. Discussion. Thank you for your time.
Anything more? Thank you.
Okay. How much time I have left, but
I will give you the 5 minutes.
Okay. Just 5 minutes left.
Had you reserved 15 and 5?
Well, 10? No, Justice Prayer, I think it was 10 and 10, and okay. I may have gone over the 10,
okay.
But I don't know. 10, okay.
Give
okay.
10.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to go back just a minute to the discussion we had about how this operates. If you look at the findings of fact, Finding 13 says MWD tools were built. So even the trial judge acknowledged expressly in her findings that the tools were built, which is really the operative issue. And even my opposing counsel used the word manufacture when we were talking about the purchased items. So I think we've really got a problem here with nomenclature. I also want to say this. I think that the trial court really never indicated in the findings and conclusions what the basis for her ruling was, especially on the 151.324 issue. As we point
isn't
out,
there, don't you think there's an implied finding that she found the purchased items were not built or were not drilling equipment?
Well, she's I don't know. One can infer that, and as we point out in our brief, there's a lot of problems with that from the legal framework. Also, factually, that's not true, and so that's the problem. I mean, you may be right. We don't have a crystal ball. I don't think you have traditional conclusions of law where she explained this is why you don't qualify. And I think the findings of fact largely are favorable to Neighbors on both of the claims here, with a couple of exceptions where we can test the findings and say why the findings are wrong.
Seems like a lot of them sort of beg the question of what certain terms being used in the findings mean.
Right.
Which is kind of what the same thing we're going around about
so
today.
I have sympathy, frankly, for the panel because I don't think this is an easy case to decide. And I have to criticize the trial judge for not, and I had no role, by the way, in these findings. I had no input on them. Now, I want to point out something else. We cite a comptroller letter, our hearing decision, in both of our briefs, the appellant's brief and the reply brief, decision 16914. And I think this would be very interesting, for example, Justice Puryear, in addressing some of your questions, to read the way they looked at this until recently. In this letter ruling, they talk about the tax division agrees that the audit erroneously assessed tax on various items purchased from outside Texas, transported into Texas, and incorporated into equipment, which was subsequently transported outside Texas. So this letter ruling basically drinks the Kool-Aid of what we're arguing about 90% if you read it. So only recently did they change and not understand the industry.
I can certainly imagine a situation where a scrubber needs to be tacked on to some pre-existing piece of equipment that completely fits within that letter opinion, and one would expect that that would be a tax-exempt situation because you're basically just enhancing what is otherwise a piece of equipment.
Well, Justice Pearl, I don't really think, you may have read this and studied this, but I would invite the panel to read this because I think this really conflicts with a lot of what they're now saying. And that's, you know, obviously, you may have read that, Justice Pearl, and I don't want to argue with you about it. I do think also I want to spend a little time on the issue the trial court ruled in our favor on. And they really haven't attacked any of the trial court's findings. I don't know, and if they have by implication attacked the findings, I don't think that they've shown any error on the trial court's the trial court committed in the refund that they granted us. I think the temporary issue is largely a factual issue, and if you look at the findings on that, she determined that it was temporary. Now, what they're trying to do is bring the Commerce Clause in, as Justice Pemberton asked, and say, well, This property tax case that they cite somehow should be relevant. It's not relevant. The property tax is different. It's a different code. It's different wording. It's a different test. This is a taxing statute. As a taxing statute, it's like in the Allstate case. It's strictly construed against the state in favor of the taxpayer. It's not an exemption. The statute says there's a use tax when you bring things in, but it says it's not a taxable use. It's not taxable if all you do when you bring items in is you store them and you assemble them. And all we've done is meet that definition so it's not taxable. And that should be construed in the taxpayer's favor, not broadened by implication as they're asking this court to do. It's also important to understand that what Neighbors did in the yard was to facilitate the assembly of items. Obviously, when items came back, they had to be rebuilt for the next job, so they had to be taken apart, cleaned. All they did, and this is in the briefs and in the record, was facilitate the reassembly. That's not a use. Think of Home Depot. They have brooms at Home Depot, stacks of brooms. Now, if they move the brooms around, they put them on a different shelf, the brooms get, the cover of the brooms gets dusty, or the water gets on them, they're taking care of that property so that they can resell that or sell that when a customer like me comes in and buys a broom. Now, if they take the broom off the shelf and start sweeping the floor at Home Depot, they've taken that out of their inventory and they're using that for its intended purpose. So as we explain in the brief, what they're saying is a use is not a use. That's a real stretch under traditional jurisprudence. It's not what the statute says.
Well, let's talk about in 330, temporary storage. We talk about Commerce Clause. It's easy to wrap your head around the idea that simply stopping overnight or very temporarily storing something here that has an ultimate destination, right? That's basically what this stems from, is kind of paralleling that, right? That temporary storage here will be exempted.
Not
does that not imply an ultimate destination? And so what is the ultimate destination for these parts, if not Texas?
The property tax has a whole different approach, and you're dealing there in that case. If you read that case, it involves natural gas that was in transit and whether it's in transit. It's a whole different issue. It's really apples and oranges. Natural gas is in a pipeline and whether it's stored.
Let's just look at strictly at 330, the temporary storage of property. Stored here temporarily, does that not imply that there is an ultimate destination? Some stopping point somewhere else outside of Texas?
Your Honor, I disagree because in when you think about items that are purchased for assembly, you might, you know, if you're building cars or whatever, You're buying items, you're going to be assembling those. You may not know when you buy them the ultimate destination of those items. And here we have a system called DD Tracker that was maintained by Neighbors to track factually where all of these items went. Okay, and so the refund calculation factually tracks in this computer database whether these are actually used exclusively out of state or not. I don't think that this exemption says that when you buy a widget, you have to know what that's going to be assembled into. I don't think that's what the statute says. It's never been interpreted that way. And the comptroller's never said that the property tax constitutional law somehow is read into this statute. That's very novel.
Reading what appears to be the statute, the temporary storage of tangible personal property acquired outside this state and then moved into this state is exempted from the use tax if, after being moved into this state, the property is stored here temporarily and is used solely outside this state. So my question simply is, does that not imply that there is an ultimate destination elsewhere?
No, Your Honor, not at the point of purchase, but to qualify for that exemption, you have to show what the destination was. Because I think in any sort of business, when items are purchased that are going to be assembled, they may or may not know when they buy them if they're going to be using them out of state. Most businesses sell in-state and out-of-state. And so I don't think that that's intended there. And it's never been interpreted that way. And it doesn't say. Now, we can overlay a requirement, but this is a taxing statute. This is sort of like the Allstate case. We can go in and overlay requirements. And in Allstate, the opinion by Justice Pemberton said, no, our job is not to overlay requirements. If there's a taxing statute involved, we don't allow requirements or burdens to be imposed unless they're expressed. It doesn't require you to know the ultimate destination. Then how would you prove that? How would you even know that? How could you know that? That's very burdensome. I mean, it's very bureaucratic.
Well, am I reading the wrong statute? Is that not what 151.330B says?
It doesn't say anything, Your Honor, about knowing the ultimate destination when you buy it.
My question is, and correct me if I'm not saying this clearly, temporary storage, does that not denote an ultimate destination somewhere else? Otherwise, why use the word temporary?
Sure, I think your point is when you store something, and all of the evidence in the record was that they had a very small storeroom, they had pressure to reduce inventory, and they were holding items until they were going to be building those into jobs. And so the way they worked is they would get an order, they would build the tool, and it would be shipped out. So they knew that everything in that storeroom was going to be built into a tool. They didn't know maybe that this widget was going to be going to Arkansas as opposed to, you know, East Texas. We don't believe that's a requirement. It doesn't, you know, they weren't storing these indefinitely. The opposite of temporary is indefinite. I think the Allstate opinion talks about this.
But if under the economic reality, as you would put it in this present case, is it temporary if it goes out and comes back and goes out and comes back and goes out and comes back?
Yeah, I mean, what you've got are multiple what you would term temporary storage multiple times over, at least until the piece of equipment gets
used up.
The lingo's, we're spending a lot of time on that. The purchased item wears out and gets chunked, right? It's multiple temporary storage, and that's kind of the question of whether B works for that.
Well, I don't think there's anything in the statute that says there's a one-time requirement. There's nothing in the statute that prevents you from bringing something in again as long as you temporarily store it again and you assemble it again. The statute doesn't...
to use solely outside the state. Again, this is the terminology of the exemption. So solely used outside the state would also seem to imply that it doesn't come back.
And again, what is the can you say one more time the relevant use here that would be taxed? Is that at the point of purchase of the purchased items or what?
Well, the use tax applies when you bring an item in to Texas for whatever reason, unless it's not a use. And so if you store it, assemble it, goes out of state, you bring it back in. then the question is, did you use it when you brought it back in? Now, the refund calculations done have excluded cases where items went out of state and came back in and then were used in state. So we were able to show through this database that when items came back in, they weren't used either, because all that was done is they were stored and assembled again. And the statute doesn't say that bringing it back in constitutes a use. It doesn't say that. If you bring it back in and you use it and drill a well, sure, that's a use. But if all you're doing is storing it again and assembling it again, the statute doesn't say that that's taxable. And the only use of these things is in drilling wells, right? I mean, if neighbors had situations where things went out of state, came back in, and they were used to drill a well in Texas, that was all excluded from the refund calculations. You know, all of this has been dissected using these electronic records. So these items were never used in Texas, is what we proved. And there was no dispute about that. There were no witnesses called to raise any of these issues, which could have been raised had they called experts to dispute anything that was proven by the plaintiff. So I know of over time, but if there's any more questions, I'm happy to answer.
Well, I do have one last question. Justice Pemberton asks, so we're talking about the these component parts are, forget what you'd prefer to refer to them as, but I'll just say for simplicity, component parts. It's that those component parts that we're speaking of when we're applying 330B. Is there a use that will attach when they are temporarily stored here? Correct.
Some of the purchases were purchased out of state. That's what the judge granted a refund on. There's a lot of things that were purchased in Texas, and that's why we're arguing 151.324, because that would make everything exempt. And just to get back to the questions about the use tax, if items came, let's say an item came in three or four times, use tax would be owed the fourth time if it came in and was used by neighbors in Texas. I mean, use tax could be, if it wasn't paid the first time it was here and it came back and then it was used to drill a well, use tax is owed. The reason use tax is owed once typically is you pay use tax when the item comes in. If you don't pay use tax because the item comes in because you're temporarily storing it and assembling it, and let's say it comes back, well, you're at risk or liable for use tax if you use it to drill a well. All that's been taken into account in the refund calculation. So I don't really, with all due respect, I don't really think this is an issue. Now, they could have factually challenged it and said, well, wait a minute, we can show that these items, the third time they came in, you drilled a well with it. They didn't challenge it because this was all factored into the refund calculation.
Well, my question was going to go to, and is used solely outside this state. That would seem to be contrary if it's this tangible personal property, these component parts being used solely outside this state.
Are you
trying to figure out exactly how to say this? It seems to be contrary to the reality that these parts are not used, rather it's what they are assembled into that is used outside this state.
And I think that's true. Ultimately, what's used is the drill string. I mean, if you want to trace that analysis, what's really used is the drill string, which is built from a number of items provided by different vendors. That's the only use of these parts, because use is really the functionality, is something used for its intended function. Go back to the broom. If the broom's used to sweep the floor, it's been used at Home Depot. Okay? If the broom's just moved around from aisle 7 to aisle 4 and they clean it or maybe put a new label on it, or it gets water damaged and they clean the broom, I mean, that's not use. That's just facilitating use. And there was never a use by neighbors at all.
Okay, so what your argument, to restate it, is really B doesn't come into play in your view of the case because there's no taxable use in Texas in regard to these purchased items, right? Unless and until they go off and drill a well in Texas or something. Right.
Well, that would be one way to look at it,
okay.
But that would only apply to the out-of-state purchases, which have already been exempted under temporary storage, and they're contesting that. And so I think B would come into play if you don't agree with the trial court.
Okay, okay.
Thank you.
Thank y'all.
Say that again. It's a difficult case, so we're trying our best to understand it.
The trial court said that the out-of-state purchases were exempt under the temporary storage, and it's not an exemption, it's a taxability. They weren't taxable, it wasn't a taxable use. So that they said there was no tax due at all because they weren't purchased, they weren't paid for here, they were brought in from out of state, and they were never used.
Right.
The problem that we have with the trial court's ruling is a lot of these items were purchased in Texas. And so for those items, there's no use tax issue because we paid sales tax on the items that we purchased here. The only way to get the sales tax exemption and get their full refund being claimed is to go with 151.324 that just deals with purchases and use, and I think it's more of a broader exemption from that standpoint. And so that's why we're arguing that. And I don't really think I'm not trying to criticize the trial court. I don't think the findings and conclusions really does explain how she ruled, and we can guess it was more just a split the baby kind of approach. And split the baby maybe works for some judges, maybe it doesn't work for other judges. I don't know, I've never been a judge, but split the baby is not always logical or reasonable. We think we should have gotten the whole refund, and that's what we're asking for. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank both sides for your presentation, and the case will be. Oh, that's right. You've got cross appeal. That's right. I was about to forget that.
So I think maybe I can clarify a few things for you. First, when an item is purchased, tangible personal property is purchased and brought into Texas, there is a presumption under the tax in Texas. It can be purchased outside of Texas and brought into Texas, right? There is a presumption that item will be used in the state. And that is why we have these use tax exemptions, right? Because the taxpayer gets an opportunity to rebut the presumption that an item purchased and brought into Texas is going to be used here.
It'll just be stored temporarily and used elsewhere.
Right. And so when we are interpreting tax exemptions, they are narrowly construed against the taxpayer. So I think it is important here to look at the statutory text, and particularly the use tax, the name of 151.330 is interstate shipments, common carriers, and services across state lines. That doesn't contemplate property leaving Texas and coming back, and leaving Texas and coming back, and leaving Texas and coming back. And furthermore, particularly the items, when they're no longer reused, they're disposed of here. That's not preparation for reassembly. That is a use. I also think there are a few factual items that may clarify things for the court. Particularly when these component parts are purchased, they're interchangeable. And so they can be used for both in-state drilling or out-of-state drilling. And when the mud motors and NWD tools were disassembled, they weren't necessarily reassembled with the same parts that they went out with the first time. And so the tracking system that Neighbors used only tracked where assembled drilling equipment was used. So we knew an assembled MWD tool, for example, was used in Louisiana, but we don't know which piece of equipment each component part was assembled into. And so it could be that the component parts were used both in-state and out-of-state, and as Neighbors has conceded, use in-state is taxable. Particularly going to the viability of Neighbors' refund claim, they couldn't identify a single transaction that would be a tax-exempt transaction. The data just wasn't there. There wasn't evidence of how long the components stayed in the inventory before they went out to these out-of-state jobs. But also, there was no evidence presented of use outside of after the period. And so it could be that there are transactions, purchases of these component parts, where after the audit period ended, those component parts were used in Texas, and then therefore were not even if we assumed that neighbors met all of the statutory requirements for a tax exemption, which the state thinks that they don't, even then, they still couldn't prove by preponderance of the evidence that they would be entitled to a refund on any particular transaction, just simply because of the lack of data.
I guess, is that where they relied on, I guess, formulas or ratios to determine state versus out of state?
Right, and so
that wasn't good enough?
There's not a problem with, sampling's not a problem.
Okay.
And sampling's used all the time in tax cases. The auditors use it, the businesses, taxpayers use it. That using a sample or percentage is not the problem. The problem is that there was no available data to link a purchase to an exclusive out-of-state use of a particular component part, and so the percentage couldn't be calculated within this.
Because it might have been assembled into a drill string that's used out-of-state, brought back, disassembled, and reassembled into one used in the state.
That's correct. And so Neighbors just didn't meet its burden of proof in proving that a particular transaction was tax exempt, even looking within the sample. And so I think that, you know, even if the court chose to, their failure to meet their burden of proof on the refund negates its ability to get a tax refund. And I see I'm out of time.
Council, one last quick question
for
you. In this industry, from a taxation standpoint, I'm no tax expert. Maybe after this case, I'll be better. But is drilling equipment ever construed as tangible personal property under the tax code?
Yes.
In what
drilling equipment would be considered tangible personal
property.
Those
aren't inconsistent, correct?
No.
So arguably, under the right set of facts, a company could receive an exemption under both 324 and 330, correct?
I think under the right set of facts, that is true.
Thank you.
And I think it's because Neighbors is a services provider. They don't sell the MWD tools or the mud motors. That would be different. Thank you very much.
All right, we appreciate y'all's fine argument with that now.